Welcome to AM Best Audio.
For more than three decades, Michael McGlaris & Company has helped its clients cross the great divide between insurance and self-insurance. The company has pioneered approaches to the transfer of risk for hospital systems, individual community hospital facilities, physician groups, health maintenance organizations, and others. I'm John Weber for Best Review Magazine, and it's my pleasure today to speak with Mike McGlaris. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Hey, John. Thank you for the invitation, and what a beautiful July morning. I'm so glad we can share part of it together.
As am I. And Mike, you've been sitting in the center of the captive marketplace for almost 35 years now. In general, how would you describe the state of play in the captive marketplace?
I would say that I'm more optimistic about the future of captive insurance companies than I have ever been since I started in the industry, period. And I'm delighted to be able to say that. I'm sanguine about our future in the captive industry. We can talk a little bit about that. I'm also seeing some darker clouds on the horizon that I want to maybe address with you or talk or certainly allude to a little bit later on. We can talk about that. But I'm in general very optimistic, very sanguine about what we're doing. And I see a very bright future for the captive industry. And we can talk about that in some detail.
Now, Mike, you've been quoted frequently as saying it's all about claims when you speak about captives. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, let's agree on something from the outset, John, that the industry meetings that you and I attend and many of your viewers attend captive industry meetings, what is the least sort of sexy topic at an industry meeting? I think it's claims. Claims management, how to reserve, how to adjust a claim, how to go to RFP for defense counsel, how to manage the litigation process. To be honest, if you want to clear the hall out really fast in the captive industry meeting, announce you're having a session or a seminar on claims. But what is the lifeblood of the captive movement and what is the lifeblood of captives? It is, in fact, the management of claims. At the end of the day, captives are great, huge claim-paying mechanisms. And the industry has gotten its arms around in the last four decades, has gotten its arms around how to manage and adjust and reserve and compromise and manage the litigation for claims. It is, in fact, the payment of claims and the adjustment of claims and the learning from the mistakes that claims are by another name in terms of the improvements of quality and the improvements of processes. It is about claims that I think captives at the end of the day are all about. I think it's one of the reasons, John, and many of your viewers may agree, why the captive market continues to flourish in an environment that's been on again soft and on again hard, as you know, cyclically over the past three decades. Why do captives flourish in these soft market times? I'm convinced it's because when you get in the business of adjusting and managing your own claims, I don't think you want to go back.
But Mike, a lot of people are saying that we're in the middle of a hard or certainly a hardening property and casualty insurance and reinsurance market. If that's the case, what effect is that having on the number of captives being formed and that will be formed in the future?
Yeah, I would say that being the old guy that I am in the industry, John, I would say that we are not in a hard market. I would say that we are in a course correcting market. I've lived through three hard markets in my time. The last one was in 2002 and 2003. It was terrible. But what do I mean by that? 2003, 40 minutes down the road from my office here, 300 OBGYNs in their white coats marched on the state capitol. Why did they march? Because they couldn't even buy professional liability coverage. Forget cost, they couldn't buy it. You're in a hard market when pricing deteriorates, when availability of limits deteriorate, but you're mostly in a hard market when you can't get it. We're not there yet. We're in a course-correcting market. If you have a cyber liability renewal that you're thinking about putting a piece of in your captive and your expiring limit is $10 million and you're paying what you used to pay for 10, but you're only getting 5, that's a course-correcting market. That's a hardening market. That's a difficult market. But it's not a true hard market because you can still buy it. And I think the key here is understanding that captives are going to play an increasing role in this course-correcting market, if you will, John, by doing something that they haven't really done in a long time, and that is not replacing coverage, actually augmenting it. So in the example that I just used, and we have a couple of examples we're working on now, where a cyber renewal used to be 10 and you can only buy 5 or 7, are you turning to your captive to take a look at the possibility of writing a portion of your cyber program, the portion you can't replace at renewal, the way to augment the property and casualty insurance market by using your captive insurance company? So I think in a hardening, course-correcting market, we're going to see a brand new role for captives augmenting existing P&C coverages.
Do you think there's a secret sauce that guarantees the superior performance of a captive over an extended period of time?
There is a secret sauce, and it is ownership engagement, period. You know, I'm a business owner. I buy commercial insurances. Once I authorize that check to be signed and my accountant sends that check out to renew our workers' compensation program and our property program and our general and primary and excess general liability program, our D&O program, our cyber program, when I authorize those payments, I'll be candid, I'm an industry professional, but I immediately forget what I've just done and the importance of what I've just done until the following renewal, which happens, you know, 10 months after the fact. If I had my insurances placed in a captive, and they're not large enough for me to do that, but if I did it, where would my mind be focused? My mind would be focused on what's the premium I'm paying. My mind would be focused on what's the net retained risk I'm taking in my captive. My mind would be focused on looking at quarterly financial results, on claims in reserve to be paid. The one thing about captives that make them so distinguishedly different, I think, over time, is it force functions ownership's laser-like attention on that balance sheet. How are we doing? How are we managing risk? What are we using that premium for? And I think it's one of the reasons why captives have succeeded over multiple decades, because if I can focus management's time and attention on the way that captive is working, on the way that balance sheet is working, I can improve quality and performance inside the organization. Whether you're a healthcare system, whether you manufacture widgets, doesn't make any difference. The improvement in what you do is what this is all about, and captives play a great role in that, John. I think we're both convinced of that.
Now, Mike, your firm has specialized for many years in healthcare liability and captives. And now that we're seeing a light at the end of the COVID tunnel, how have healthcare liability captives performed during the crisis, and what's the prognosis for the future?
Yeah, that's a good question. A question I think that many of us are asking and trying to answer. One thing is certain, though. Go back a year and a half, and let's take our minds back to the beginning of this terrible crisis. We had healthcare system clients where the United States Army would arrive with 700 or 800 or 1,000 personnel and set up a field hospital in the middle of a parking lot, including a couple of hundred nurses and 50 to 75 Army physicians and surgeons. Why? Because we thought we were going to simply run out of capacity. I watched those tent cities going up. Talk about the definition of hero. I think we all understand what that definition is when we think about our healthcare workers. But something very interesting, all of my healthcare system clients, hospital system, individual standalone hospital clients, have or an individual captive or participate in a group captive arrangement of one kind or another. And all of them were getting prepared for COVID-based litigation. Well, we're starting to emerge in certain states now, John, from this COVID litigation cocoon, if you will. The courts are reopening up in a slow but steady way. And guess what? It's the largest nothing burger in the industry. Are we going to be inundated by COVID-based medical malpractice litigation that will stick to the ribs of these healthcare system captives? I'm predicting the answer is an emphatic no. If it was going to happen, some of it would be happening by now. And I draw a distinction between healthcare liability and senior care liability. On the senior care side, I think we're in for an exceptionally rough time, and we have evidence of that with our clients that we assist. On the healthcare liability system side, I, as of today, do not have a single direct COVID-related piece of litigation arisen from any captive that we manage. There's been some indirect stuff. We can talk about that. But at the end of the day, I think this is going to be a huge nothing burger.
So, Mike, you pioneered the captive, the first captive, in what you called the ideal public-private partnership. What does this captive look like, and what makes it different?
Yeah, it's a strange beast, but I'm happy to be associated with it. It is a captive which has been formed by the state of Connecticut, and my firm is running it on a day-to-day basis along with our other captive responsibilities. Here in Connecticut, we have something called the Crumbling Foundations Crisis. Very simply put, your basement begins to crumble. I can reach up and pull, tear huge sheets of it. Pardon me. In fact, you begin to see fractures in your basement long before you can peel. And they're not these horizontal fractures, John, that you associate with stress or earth movement. They are, in fact, horizontal. They look like maps, like road maps, intersecting cracks on a horizontal lateral basis throughout the foundation. That is because of an overabundance of the mineral pyrrhotite in the concrete aggregate. One by one, those homeowners over the past 20 years have applied to their commercial homeowners insurance companies for claim relief, and one by one they've been turned down, and in fact the Connecticut Supreme Court sustained the commercial insurance industry's position on the turndown of those claims. So the then governor, Dan Malloy, approached me and said, will you form a captive? I understand, this is the governor talking, that captives are great at managing claims. They bring claims discipline and underwriting discipline to any process where they are working effectively. We did that for him, and we have been the recipient so far of $300 million of funds from the state of Connecticut. We have the know-how in terms of creating the underwriting platform to manage the claim process and to make these homeowners whole, and the state has the wherewithal in terms of the cash. It is the ultimate public, I would say, private partnership, governmental or state funds used for essentially a private purpose in what essentially is a rolling natural disaster.
Going to put you on the spot here, Mike. Now, as you think about the captive marketplace, what's your mood these days? Is it optimism or pessimism?
It is pessimism in one particular regard, and it's a little bit of anger, too, I'll be honest with you, and tons of optimism. Let's talk about the pessimism. You know, the captive industry, John, is noted, in my view, for one very distinct thing. We are self-regulated. Think about what I just said. How do we regulate this industry? Well, we regulate it among ourselves, us service providers, consultants, actuaries, brokers, right, auditors, state regulators. We come together. Someone proposes a plan to a business plan to a state regulator to form a captive. That plan contains certain elements. No federal czar, no regulatory national body of standards has said ever in the captive industry, this is the way captive feasibility studies look, this is the way plans should read. We've self-regulated. We let, and it's our fault, an insidious presence come into the captive industry, and that is the perversion of 831Bs. The biggest negative story in the captive industry is that rather than stand up and say to those who promulgated 831Bs for bad purposes, estate planning, etc., rather than stand up and audibly condemn those practices, what's happened, the Internal Revenue Service has established an office to police and patrol the abuses of what should be a glorious little mechanism called an 831B. It saddens me. It angers me. We can't speak up enough about the abuses of 831Bs, and we need to speak up frequently. On the optimistic side, we are so busy in my firm that, I can't begin to describe the captive ideas, the captive formations, the captive discussions we are having and have had. The market is flourishing, and we need to guard against insidious stuff like the 831B. All of us in this industry, by promoting fair practices, captives that actually pay claims, issue policies, hire service providers, and do it right. And there's a lot of that going on, and I'm extremely optimistic about the future in this challenging market right now.
Mike, it was great to speak with you today.
Nice to speak with you as well, John. Thanks for making time.
That was Michael McGlaris of Michael McGlaris & Company, and I'm John Weber for Best Review Magazine.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.